Hi, this is the Golden Thread Conversations, and I'm your host, Judy Murdoch. Today, my guest is musician Batya Diamond. Batya is a Hebrew priestess who offers inspirational music and personalized rituals, guiding Jewish seekers at all stages to move through life with deep and meaningful connectedness to the divine. Batya weaves together ancient Hebrew blessings, teachings, and mystical wisdom with beautiful melodies and arrangements. I experience her music as sacred as well as delightfully accessible. Her music is often in the background as I do my own work. I am so happy to be with you, Batya. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Judy. It's great to be with you.
So one of the questions I always love to ask people is their path from, you know, I think you had a more I'm going to say, quote unquote, conventional career. And now, you know, what you are doing is seems to be fully creative and spiritual. And I'm curious, how did you, what was your path? How did that work for you?
It was such a circuitous route. And it took me a long time to get to a place of really understanding the blessings of that path to be where I am now. Mm-hmm. There are many strands to it also, but a big piece of it obviously is the Jewish piece. Growing up in Brooklyn until I was about 8 years old, went to Hebrew day school and really resonated with Jewish prayer and with Hebrew and music at that time. I was sort of estranged from Judaism when I was 12 and was not allowed to read from the Torah, from the Holy Scriptures, for my bat mitzvah. And so, you know, I was sort of away from Judaism for a long time. And over that time, I went to college, I went to law school, I worked as a private investigator, I worked as eventually I found my way back spiritually after I had my two children. When my son was born, I sort of knew I was gonna have a bris for him, but just really needed to connect and understand why that felt so compelling. And I discovered that there was a lot of feminist Jewish literature that had been written in the intervening decades when I was absent, and was so moved to see that, you know, women's roles how they were changing. And so it drew me back. And one way back was by listening to music like Debbie Friedman, like Neshama Carlbach. And it really just opened me up. It reconnected me with my childhood and with all the things that I loved about Hebrew and about feeling connected to spirit.
That's lovely. And now you are, I wanted to ask a little bit more about the form that your music has taken, because you had said that you did more, conventional arrangements, and now your focus is more on chants. And what brought you to putting more focus in chant?
So part of the journey for me as a musician was trying to become a pop songwriter, trying to pitch my songs in the world of, you know, songwriters in New York. Back in the 1990s or so.
That was gutsy.
It was, and it was sort of frustrating, but I sort of got the fact, I understood the fact that my music was not quite in the right space for what they were looking for.
Interesting.
And so once I was exposed to Debbie Friedman's music, where she was able to take the conventional liturgy and add English and make it accessible, I was like, oh yeah, I can do that. And so I did that for a while. I did a couple of albums, and I went out and I performed at synagogues and women's seders and things like that. And over the years, I performed a lot of the songs at bar and bat mitzvahs that I was leading. Mm-hmm. But as I got older, I was looking for something that was deeper in the experience, as opposed to having a 4-minute song where you tell a story and it just sort of, I just wanted more of a meditative experience, you know, sort of what I would get from hearing other cultures chants. And I knew that there was a place for Jewish chant, definitely inspired by Shefa Gold, and hearing just recognizing that it was about my personal experience of receiving the music and knowing that, oh yeah, this is what's meant to be moving through me.
I like that. That's beautiful.
Thanks. And the one piece I haven't mentioned yet is the Hebrew priestess part.
Yeah, I'd love to hear a little more about that.
Because that also really brought me fully into the chanting space. So Kohenet is the Hebrew word for Hebrew priestess. It's a modern take on what's believed to be ancient functions, exploring what roles women might have had that are hinted at in the holy texts. And so as part of a group that you know, I went to their retreats, and part of the practice was a quote-unquote priestess project. Well, of course, I knew it had to be about, you know, presenting priestess music.
Yeah.
And when I meditated on what that would be, I began to really receive these chants from the divine feminine, who to me is a Shekhinah.
Right.
So many names, different people have names for God or goddess or the divine or the mystery, whatever. And so for me, the most comfortable one right now is Shekhinah. And so for my priestess project, that was when I started really compiling a lot of chants that eventually became my current album.
That's so cool. Really, I really like how you talk about that, you know, like you're receiving something from the divine and from, you know, the divine within. That's beautiful. I know you play guitar. Do you play any other instruments?
I play keyboard.
All right.
Keyboard's my first love. Problem is I can't really take it everywhere, you know.
Right. That's so cool. That's really cool. So when I've listened to your chants, and I'm just sort of curious, like, what's the process for you? Do you begin, for example, with the need for a particular chant, like you're thinking it would be really nice to have something for celebration, for example, or for asking for strength? And do you begin with the words or the music, or does it all sort of, is it just, you know, it doesn't matter?
I love your question. Thank you. There are a few different ways. The way you were describing is more of a like top-down brain first
sort
of way. And that comes in for me, like if I'm studying Torah or other texts during the week, you know, and a phrase will jump out at me.
Cool.
I'll carry that phrase and see if it has a melody and see what comes from it. And that to me it starts in an intellectual place, but then I go deeper with that. But the other way usually involves a body of water, a lake or bathtub, just somewhere where I can be really quiet and sometimes float and then just notice what I'm feeling, sometimes what I'm needing or just tapping into a feeling. And then often the words and melody come to me together in those cases.
That's so cool. I'm a little in awe of people who compose melody. Lyrics are something that I can understand as a writer. Melody feels very, just one of those like really mysterious things, like out of like some kind of ether or something.
I feel like I sort of have a lane, which is sort of like just my safe space, you know, a lot of A minor, E minor, A minor, E minor trading. Like it's fairly simplistic, which for me also for chanting that feels safe and okay. You know, that we don't want it getting too fancy. Words are definitely my strength, but if I live with the words for a while, they have their own melody. You know, they have their own frequency that wants to be sung.
I like that, but it still feels like super. Just like it just feels really mystical, like, you know, being touched by the divine. Maybe that's what it is.
Well, I call what I do collaboration.
Yeah.
Even right. If I'm the only person in the room, I'm definitely collaborating.
That's such a beautiful way to be. The other thing that I really love about your work is I really love the arrangements. And I was curious, do you do the arrangements? Do you have people you collaborate with who help you with the arrangements. They're very, you know, they're sophisticated, and they do, and this is one of the reasons I like your work so much, they do have a pop sensibility. You know, there's a lightness and, you know, like kind of an, it has a bit of an ear, you know, an earworm, you know, sort of a, is that the right phrase, where you hear a particular melody or a rhythm and it just kind of sticks in your head?
Yes. So the arrangements are largely the work of my brilliant producer friend, David Morgan. And he, you know, I came to him with chords and a melody and words and an idea of what I wanted the song to sound like, in, or the chant to sound like, in terms of like the tempo or how it was built. But he's really the genius behind that. He produced my earlier albums from the mid 2000s. And then he worked on this with me. Just a funny story, because I live in Connecticut, and I guess it was early 2000s when I was looking for someone who could be a producer for these two Jewishy records. And a friend of mine said, well, I know this guy, David, who lives, you know, two towns away from me. He works with some Jewish singer. I was like, okay, I'll give him a call. And I called David, and it turns out he had been, or at the time he was, but now he's not, the music director and keyboardist and producer for Neshama Karlbach. Mm. And so she's, you know, like Jewish music, if not royalty, then certainly has a wonderful pedigree. You know, her dad was Shlomo Karlbach. And and so the fact that I happened to be connected with him as the producer really helped elevate everything. If I hadn't worked with him, I can't imagine how things would have been different.
Yeah, he really works magic with what you do. And creative work is one of the more surprises for me, I guess, was I didn't realize how dependent creative work is on having, if you want to call it a really great team or a great group of collaborators. There is the work that we do ourselves as creators, and then there is like this beautiful synergy that happens when we bring, you know, I wouldn't even say necessarily like-minded, or although that is very much accurate, light-spirited maybe, or like-hearted. They just kind of, you just kind of get what one another is going for.
Yes, yes. It's really magical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what would you consider to be sort of your developmental edge right now? Is there a project that you're taking on or thinking about that, you know, feels like, yeah, I really want to do it, but it also feels pretty scary?
Well, what you were just talking about in a way is part of that, which is collaboration, because that's always been a challenge for me. I feel often very possessive, my idea is too precious and I'm afraid to share it. So that's the edge for me. Also on both sides, because I think sometimes I don't trust myself enough and I go to others too soon.
Right.
And either I lose the real sense of what I'm trying to do. So I guess it's really about those sacred boundaries, right? When to
yes.
in and when to, you know, not yet.
Yeah, I think that's a really great way of articulating it. It's like I would call it an equilibrium point. It shifts from hour to hour sometimes, just depending on, I know where I'm at in terms of, how I want to involve other people in a project. So we're talking a little bit about these challenges, and I wanted to, I'm really interested in the challenges that come up in the creative process and in being a creative person, because I used to think people who did creative work were sort of in this like blissed out space all day. You know, it's kind of like just, you know, hey, I'm doing my craft, I'm doing my art. And I've found, at least for myself, that there's a lot of, it's scary, I think. It's often scary, it's often intimidating. And I was just curious for you, you had mentioned collaboration. Are there other things for you where self-doubt, you know, kicks your butt or other things come up for you?
It's fascinating how many ways I can avoid sitting down to write or play.
Right on.
And I talked to myself about this lately. Like, Batya, go sit down at the keyboard. You don't need to get, you know, unscrew the drain and unclog the drain right now. I mean, it feels like there are always things around the house or places I need to go, you know, I'm spiritual and I'm very secular at the same time.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. and I sort of like both of those roles, but they don't always allow me to just lock myself in this room and do the art that my heart needs.
They don't necessarily play well together. You know, I'm thinking about, I think that's like a really good way to say it. And I've heard someone once talk about inspiration, and the way they were talking about it was, again, this is, I think, one of those myths of being a creator that we kind of surf on inspiration all the time. And what this person said, this was somebody who was a composer, and he said, you know, inspiration is really nice when you can get it, but a lot of it really is just like scheduling time or setting time aside and sitting your butt down and working.
Right.
And so it has a little bit of that aspect of, you know, normal everyday work.
Right.
You know, but instead of sitting down and doing taxes or something like that, you're sitting down and you're working on music.
And still, when I work on music, I need to allow spaciousness and not necessarily finishing. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. For me, there's something so satisfying about, you know, having tasks and checking them off or just getting things completed.
For sure.
And so that's constantly, you know, a struggle for me.
Mm. Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying about the, do you run into times where you have an idea and it is just not happening?
When I get an idea, I'm pretty good at working it and going back and working it, if not in one session, then revisiting it. And if it's not, you know, like after, you know, four or five times of trying or playing around with melodies, I let it go. And sometimes they come back to me eventually. And if not, mm-hmm. that's okay.
That's a good way to articulate it. So what nourishes you and helps you move through some of these difficult times, through the resistance and other things that can get in the way of creating?
Back to the body of water, to walking, hiking on a trail, putting the phone away and the computer. And being in nature for me is the most nourishing.
You had mentioned earlier about reading sacred texts as a priestess and how much as a child you really loved Jewish prayer and Hebrew. And I'm curious about, is there anything in particular about Hebrew? Because I have my own, there are elements or aspects of Hebrew that I love, but as a visual artist, and I'm curious as a musician, you know, what is it about Hebrew that just resonates so deeply for you?
I'm not sure if this is as a musician, quote unquote, but I can sort of speak to the question anyway. I love the playfulness of Hebrew because there's a root word and then you can play around with different variations on that word and it has a different meaning.
Can you give an example?
Thank you. So the word ruach, it means spirit. It also means breath.
Mm.
And reach means scent.
Oh, wow.
And And this isn't directly related, but Yareach is the moon.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, so I play around with those, you know, combinations. And you can write your own, you know, story. You can see the story, which, you know, the rabbis of the Talmud or Kabbalah would do that all the time. They would take the letters of the words and relate them, or take the numerical value of the letters, gematria, and mean, say that, well, these two words are totally connected because they have the same value in gematria.
Right.
So that's playfulness, but it's also it's also a window into the mysticism. Because then all of these words, you know, as you combine them, in each of us in our own way, right? I find my own meaning in doing that. So that just takes me to a bigger and a more expansive place than just the language and the words.
I always like the thing I think that's so cool about Hebrew is it's so ancient. And I love how it was, English is a relatively, a lot of, I don't know if you would call it Indo-European, but a lot of languages that are common in the West, at least, are relatively recent languages. You know, a lot of them came out of Latin and Greek. And I love how Hebrew, to me, is a language where I think to myself, the word for water, for example, that's just such a primal word. And imagining our ancestors living a nomadic existence and the sacredness of water, what water meant to them. I feel like it takes me into the skin of ancestors who lived thousands of years before I was born.
Got a chill when you said that. That's beautiful, Judy.
Thank you. Yeah, it's the reason, it's what attracted me to learning Hebrew. Not to mention the fact the characters themselves are just beautiful. Mm-hmm. I love playing with them.
And on the flip side, one of the issues I have with Hebrew is it's gendered.
Yes.
And especially in these times, well, there are people who are working on ungendering Hebrew, which is really exciting. Part of my work in writing, you know, chants of the feminine divine is taking the ancient scripture and changing it into feminine language, feminine God language instead of masculine, which again, it feels so binary still, but that's where I'm at.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I agree. I always wonder, you know, whether it was like an artifact of a later time, or do you think it began as a very, you know, gender distinctive?
I'm sure there are scholars who could tell you, but I mean, did most of the writing, so I guess that became, you know, the default,
you know,
gender in most cases.
I know that's an issue that a lot of, excuse me, just a lot of women struggle with in general. I do with Hebrew. What is your favorite thing about creating? Or do you have one favorite thing? It could be multiple.
Well, the main thing that comes to mind is the reveal or the revelation. Like as I give myself over to receiving, and then, you know, this a little seed of an idea, and then I do a little maybe intellectual exploration or some meditation, then I receive more information, and to feel how those pieces go together. Part of it is like solving a puzzle, but part of it also is like just opening a flower.
I like that. That's a beautiful image. Yeah, I can relate a lot. It's, I think it's one of the great joys in life.
Yeah. You know, creating something new, making something where there was nothing.
Yes, exactly.
Reveals, like also like, I believe that it's somewhere in the ether, in the universe, and then I'm chosen to channel the information.
Yeah, and kind of bring it into existence, at least in this world.
Yeah,
that's like so cool. That's like, I think it's so awesome. I love the role of creating. So my last question for you is, where can people go who want to learn more about you, who want to learn more about your music, or who want to purchase your music?
Well, Well, thank you for asking. It's easy. My website is batyadiamond.com. So that's B-A-T-Y-A, diamond, like the ring, batyadiamond.com. And also if you go to Bandcamp and search Batya Diamond on Bandcamp, that's where you can hear all of the music and download it.
And there's a lot of music that is available to listen to on your website and on Bandcamp. We were very generous.
Yes, and Spotify, it's on Spotify too. So.
That's great. Is there anything before we close that we haven't talked about that you would like the audience to know about? About you, about your work, about just something you want to really share?
I think where I am now with my music, and especially the album of chants, which is called Infinite Wisdom, Chants of the Divine Feminine, is moving away from any selfish desire for promotion or recognition. And that it's really that these chants are meant to find their way in the world.
Wow. Right?
They're meant for others to receive.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd encourage people to go and listen and find something that resonates. On the Bandcamp page, there are hashtags that sort of, give you a clue as to what a particular chant is about. So even if you don't know Hebrew, for example, like people chant Sanskrit often.
Yes.
They don't know exactly what they're chanting, or it's another sacred ancient language.
Exactly.
That may resonate for you.
Yeah. You hit on a topic for me, which sometimes feels a little kind of prickly would be a good word for that, where I too do work, which is, has a lot of like what I use Hebrew and there's, you could look at my work and say it's Judaica. And I think to myself, it is, and it's for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's as you said, it's really there more to connect with somebody and to give them something.
And at the same time, and I know this about your work, or at least I'm inferring this, that it's healing for us too. As we're creating it, it's healing.
So much, very much. I will often read the words that are in my work, and they still have a lot of power and comfort and soothing, and it really does feel like they are my words, but they're not my words, or it isn't just my energy.
Yes, exactly.
Well, my friend, thank you so much. It was a pleasure being with you.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. And in closing, I will play a little bit of Batya's music to close by.